finish at my apartment, 483C, 187th Street. We have a lot of high school guys coming for the open house around the corner over there, and some of the chevra from the shir, some of the chevra from the yeshiva, make a lebedek, Mr. Hashem. So there'll be plenty of delicious food.
What is it?
8 or 8:15, Friday night.
It's really early.
Okay. Shop starts really early. Okay. Shop starts like 4:15. This can't.
No way.
Okay. All right, Masai. So if you don't have the pages here from Zohar Mishra, please take one. But I want to focus.
Are we gonna do any more kaksov? You want any?
Yeah, I think guys are the chapping. We'll do that in the future. There's a very interesting line. Seems like a harmless line. And this week's parsha. Where's the chumash? Okay. So the final episode at the end of the parsha told us is of course the episode in which Yaakov steals the brachas from from Esau by going into Yitzchak's room and dressing up like Esau. Now, leading up to that point, Rivka has to prepare Yaakov Avinu to play the role. And we know that Yaakov didn't quite pull it off in his manner of speech, and that Yaakov was almost discovered. A kol kol Yaakov Aydaim de Esav. But the Aydaim de Esav, how did the hands resemble Esav? What does the Medrash say? They were hairy. They were hairy, right, because he was wearing the clothing, as the pasuk says, that Esav would normally wear, and these, the Medrash say, these were the clothing that had come from Adam HaRishon. They were stolen by Nimrod. There was a Messiah in these clothing. Okay? From Nimrod, who was the first one to be described as a hunter. So what does it say? Perek of Zion. Vatomer lo imo alai kolosko b'ni, ach shema v'koli v'lech kachli. Says, you have to follow my instructions. If you suffer in any way, if you bring about a klal upon yourself from Yitzhak, she says, I take responsibility. Batikach Rivka as big de Esav b'no ha-godol ha-chamudos asher ita b'avoyis v'tal beish as Yaakov b'no ha-katan. So, klal, there's a lot of interesting Rashi's over here. Rashi says that why did Rivka have the clothing of Esav? Right? Asher ita b'avoyis. Esav would store his clothing at the house of his parents. Why did he store them there? He had wives. Yeah, he had his own home. Right? He didn't trust them. Rashi says he didn't trust them. Unbelievable, okay? Well, say, dating advice, don't marry someone you can't trust with your own clothing. Okay? It's another shmooze. But Esav, it shows, even Esav realized that he had been married to Rishon, it seems like. Okay. Let's focus on the first part. Vatigach Rivka's big day Esav b'no ha-godol ha-chamudos. Rivka took the clothing of Esav b'no ha-godol. Translate? Her older son. B'no ha-godol. So, interesting, Schwab points out, B'noha Gadol, what's the significance of Gadol? What did that add over here? Rav Schwab said that B'noha Gadol refers to the fact that as a son, he was the Gadol, because he was the master of Kibbutz Avim, right? So maybe that's one reason to call him B'noha Gadol. But if you think about the Pasuk on the Pasuk, it's really kind of surprising. B'noha Gadol. So, Baruch Hashem, we're Zohar twins, okay? And our twins are approximately 22 minutes apart. Okay? Now, 22 minutes apart is actually on the long end of the difference between the first and the second. I think the average is something like, is that short? Yeah? I thought it was a little bit longer, but I think it's about 17. Every once in a while, you see in the newspaper on January 1st, they announce twins born a year apart, you know, because one was born December 31st, and, you know, before midnight, and the other one was born a little bit later, early in the morning. Okay. See you next year. Yeah. Okay. But if you think about it, so we know the story. Pasuk tells us that Esav came out and Yaakov was holding onto his heel, right? So what are we talking about over here? A few minutes, right? What could have possibly been the difference between the first and the second child, right? So on one level, B'no HaGadol is kind of ironic over here, right? This is my son Esav. He's my big son, right? He's the older son. By what, like 5 minutes, right? So I understand, like, if you... You know, sometimes when we bring our kids to school at the beginning of the year, you know, and you meet the teacher, so sometimes, you know, people ask, oh, which one's older? You know, okay, happens to be Aaron is like a foot taller than Baruch, so people make, you know, people can't even, like, comprehend that they're twins, but that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu made them. But, okay, you know, like, they're a few minutes apart, so B'no HaGadol. It seems a little bit strange, but it's worse than that, Rabbi. How old were Yaakov and Esav at this time? How old were they? 60 years old. 60 years old, okay? So at the age of 60, they're old enough to be grandfathers. So my big boy and my little boy. It's just like, what are they doing over here in the pasuk? So it's very strange, right? Yeah, when I saw my kids brought home their coloring sheets from the Parsha, so there's a picture of Yaakov giving a bracha to Yaakov. Yitzchak giving a bracha to Yaakov. So Yaakov is always like portrayed as this like little kid, like going in to steal the bracha. You know, like he was 60 years old, right?
So
you have to put things in perspective. So b'no hagadol, what's going on over here? So the Balei Musar say a very simple word, but it's a very powerful word. You know why Rivka refers to him as b'no hagadol? Because Rivka was someone who had a very keen appreciation of the value of every single second. Every single minute.
Who?
Rivka Benagel. A tzaddik is someone who looks at every moment of time that they're blessed with in this world as extremely valuable. You can't fulfill your mission in life, and you can't be productive, and you can't be uber productive the way the Avos and the Imos and Tzaddikim throughout generations were, unless you have this attitude that one child is a few minutes older than the other, but Beno HaGadol. Because what's significant to you, a much longer stretch of time, someone who has an even greater appreciation of time sees that same value even in a very short interval, the difference between B'nai HaGadol and B'nai HaGadol. They say that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman lived in pre-war Lithuania, it's Rabbi Shimon Baranovich. Okay, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the style in those days, you bought a pair of boots, people wore boots, they didn't wear like shoes as much, especially in the cold European winters, a lot of snow, so everyone had boots. So when you see like boots of soldiers, like Nazis, you know, dressed in their full garb. You know, so they have these tall boots with like a million laces, right? Even look at a chayal, yeah. Like how many holes are there, for the laces? It's a lot, right? That's a side. We wear boots. Boots have a lot of laces. Buchanan insisted on only buying slip-on shoes. Why? Because he would not sacrifice the length of time it took to lace up his boots, because it was so valuable to him, he could only wear something that he could slip on and slip off. Okay. So now, it seems very simple, but, you know, on the one hand, from a Torah perspective, there's a Moshe Feinstein, someone once came to our table, I don't know if I ever saw this in print, a Shabbos table, he told us the following board. He said, you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu missed out on the jackpot, when the Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, right? Avram Avinu's promise by Hashem Baruch Hu, Achra Kain Yetzu B'Chush Gadol. After all the years of slavery, I will take out your descendants, and they'll be fabulously wealthy. And we know that they mamish cleaned out Mitzrayim. That's what Lashon HaPasuk says. They cleaned them out. They went around during Choshech. They found all the places they were hiding gold and silver, and then they came and asked for it, and they sent it out with them. Not to mention that they also took a lot of stuff from Yamsuf, all the gold and silver that was attached to the chariots of the soldiers that had drowned in the Yamsuf. But they came out fabulously well, except for one person, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? How come Moshe Rabbeinu, why did he miss the boat? So everyone else was going around asking for gold and silver, Moshe Rabbeinu was busy locating the Aron of Yosef. Because Yosef had made the brothers promise that they would take his bones out of his arms to be buried in Israel. So Moshe Rabbeinu took that responsibility upon himself. So he was poor. He was the leader of Klal, but he was poor. So Hashem says, I'm going to make it up to you because you were involved in doing a mitzvah. What does Hashem say? Right, sapphire. The sapphire stones were used to carve the luchos, the second set of luchos. Sol lucha, luchos avanim. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu when he forgives Klal Yisrael the Chet HaEgel, he says, "I want you to carve out your own second set of luchos." And Rashi says on that pasuk, "Sol lucha," literally, right? Pasuk John Buzgis, "I want you to go ahead and engrave the luchos." Rashi says, "Psal lucha the psoles mamish arsuga," right? Psal yotim masuka. The leftover, the psolas garn vayekev, the leftover sapphires, you get to keep those. Okay? So I understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to do a favor to Moshe Rabbeinu, Eved Hashem, you want to make him rich, give the man a pot of gold. Yeah? You give him leftover scraps from a job you told him to do to engrave the luchos? Right, what's the pshat? So Moshe Feinstein explained you wanted to teach Moshe Rabbeinu. You describe the luchos, teach you something about learning Torah. How do you become a gadol in learning Torah? It's by taking the scraps. You have 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, waiting for your chavrusa to come into the room, you're waiting for the teacher to come into the room because you got to class on time and she didn't get there. You're waiting for Chazaras HaShatz. Learn a Mishnah. people finish Siddurim of Mishnayos waiting for the Chazan to finish and start Chazar Sashas. Right? There's so many stories about people who finish Shas. You know, and that, why? Because they were waiting for the Chuppah to start. And they learned another Black Gemara. I'm telling you, that separates the men from the boys. The people who take advantage of these short pockets of time, they have that Hakara of Rivka, that every moment counts. Okay? That was Rav Moshe Feinstein said. So, El Lel Gishma. Okay? We spoke about Rivka, we spoke about Rukhana Wasserman. I want to suggest where Rivka got this Midah from, where we see that it emerged from, and where we see Rav Chanan got this Midah from. Okay? First, look at the Leiv Eliyahu. Who wrote the Leiv Eliyahu, Rav Osai? Rav Eliyahu Lapyan, one of the Mamish leaders of Musar in I would say almost the current generation. He died in 1960, and he gave us a whole generation of Bali Musar, such as Matzil Solomon, Mashgiach Lakewood, Tom Rav Eliyahu Lapyan, and just one ha'ar he makes at the end of last week's parsha. We know that the paradigm of Chesed, one of the paradigms of Chesed, is Rivka, the way she behaves, providing water for Avram's servant Eliezer's camels, right? And that's how Eliezer knew that this was the girl for Yitzchak, Baal Chesed. So how do you know? Is it because she just brought him water? Maybe that's not such a big chiddush, right? This was going to be the person. So you have to see more than just the fact that she provided the water. So he points out that if you read the psukim, May I have never noticed this. Three times in the pasuk you find she was running. Vatarat, she's running. Vatemaher, she's speeding. But what's she doing? Listen, it's a great deal. Vatemaher vatira kada al yoda vatashkehu. Translate. Vatemaher means she was going quickly. Vatired kada, she
brought down her jug.
She lowered her jug, right? Okay. Rashi says, "Me'al shichma," she lowered the jug quickly from her shoulders, from me'al shichma from her shoulders. Okay. So he asked, "What are you talking about here?" I get it. If you're driving from one place to another and you're speeding, so I have to go 10 miles, and instead of it taking me 15 minutes, it takes me 10 minutes because I'm going fast. What is the distance between the pitcher on your shoulder and the pitcher brought down to your hand to put it in the well? What are we talking about over here? It's a few inches, right? Is there even any room to be memahir? Right? If you see mehiras there, you see someone who has a quality of valuing even the split second. Even the benoha katan, the difference between Esav and Yaakov, was the difference of benoha gadol, benoha katan. Okay? That was the gadol for me, though. That's where you see Rivka came from. Bochanan, Rav Osai, these are mind-blowing stories. I want to be straight up, okay? Before you hear these stories and you just, you know, push it out the window, okay? I want to be very careful to emphasize that the stories that you're about to hear are stories of Gedolim, okay? Which means that we have to extract what's relevant for us on our own level, but we have to appreciate how far the Midah goes to be able to truly grasp what difference it makes and why there's a hallmark of someone who's taka on a different level. If you look at it's page Yud Tes, okay? This is actually from last week's parsha of Vayera. Vatera Sara as ben Hagar mitzachek, Batomel Avram garesh as amazos das benah. Sara sees that Hagar's son Yishmael is not behaving, right? Why he's mitzachek? He's playing around, he's joking around. Rashi interprets that he was involved in the three most serious of eros and tells Avram to come out of the house. Rabbeinu Avram ben Arambam, Rambam's son. His name was Rabbeinu Avram ben Arambam, and he wrote a number of pirushim. Chumash, she wrote a Musar Sefer. So he says, what exactly was it that Sarah was bothered by about Yishmael that made her kick him out of the house? So she saw that he didn't speak nicely, but more than that, he was just like a little too casual. Kidera Hana'arim. The way kids are sometimes. And she was afraid. What was she afraid of? She was afraid. Chashisha Bishabro Yishmael, if he would hang out with Yishmael, not that he's going to learn to be a murderer and be an adulterer and serve a Avodah Zarah, what was she worried about? If he's friends with Yishmael, the Yavala Bismano Sha'a Bizulas Asik Bishleman Shimuchanislo, he would waste even a single Sha'a distracted from the goal of Shlemus that was accessible to him. Okay? So why was he a bad role model? Why was he a bad friend?
Because he was just playing around. He was
yeah.
doing some cake.
Because he was playing PlayStation. You know, like, he did not focus on what his mission in this world was, and he wasted time. Yishmael was older. Yishmael was a teenager at that point. Right? Yishmael was 13 when Yitzchak was born. Okay? So he was mature enough to have a head on his shoulders, not fool around. And he didn't. So Rav Moshe Shmuel uses that as a springboard to talk about the importance, again, of not wasting time, taking advantage of every opportunity. And he brings a few stories. So first of all, this is Geshmak. We learned about Rav Moshe Shmuel this week. So he tells a story about when he was in Baranovich. He was in Baranovich, the Talmud of Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Okay? So going back to the 30s. Elchanan Wasserman, Gedolei Olam. Look at the bottom of page Chaf on the right-hand column. Shalamadati Baranovich, Eitzel Moreno Hagon Rav Elchanan Wasserman Zatzal Siper. Kishahayu Bevarsha, Ira Chasidus. Rav Elchanan was once visiting Warsaw. It was a big center of Hasidic dynasties. Shalom Arosham. He came back from Warsaw, and his friends asked him, "No, so what do you experience in Warsaw? Tell us about the trip." Heishiv Shai Itzal Admar Zakin Migor. He was by the altar Ger Rebbe, who was living in Warsaw at the time. Rosh Yeshul Sedarim Shachamishu Regoyim Vispoel Miikras Hareishal Admar Zakin Migor. What was the inspiration of Rav Elchanan? Right, we said Rav Elchanan, he wouldn't even get the lace up boots. Where did he derive that information from? Because when he was by the Ger Rebbe, he noticed that the Ger Rebbe had 5 minutes siddurim. We have a seder for an hour and a half. We have a chalusa. Okay, maybe you have a chalusa for half an hour before shir starts. You learn a mishnah berurah or something like that. He had 5 minutes siddurim. 5 minutes waiting for the chazaras hashatz. 5 minutes waiting for davening to start. He had structured his time so that when he had free time, it did not go to waste because he had a plan, because he valued that short window, and he devised projects for himself so that he would be productive even in those short opportunities. We sometimes waste hours at a time. Who knows what? On your phone, on your computer, just so much time goes by. If you say, Rebbe, I was watching a YouTube video. It was 6 minutes and 34 seconds. Okay, so we all know that often leads to a chain of events whereby you end up seeing 14 6.5 minute videos, and you just look back at yourself and say, like, what in the world was I doing for the last hour and a half? Okay, but 6.5 minutes. 6.5 minutes, that's a seder. The reason we even have a taiva to watch some ridiculous documentary about, like, you know, how to, I don't know, like, whatever. Fill in the blanks. Is because we say, oh, it's just 6 minutes. There's no such thing as just 6 minutes. There's no that those words should not be on your lips. There's no such thing as just 6 minutes. There's, wow, 6 minutes! What can I do in 6 minutes? Tell me, it will change your life. Another story, we'll say. Another story, this is mind-blowing. Look at the bottom left. Maisa b'morein ha'gon Rav Elchanan Zatzal. Another story of Rav Elchanan. Okay, we see this was clearly a hu haya omer. Shalomad b'chavrusa marav mipanovich zatzal. So I fall off my chair when I just read a line like that. Like, imagine a chavrusa, the panovich rav and Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Okay? It's like, sometimes I think about the fact that Rav Shapton and Rav Willi were chavrusas for 6 years together. Oh, Yom Taka. I think you guys, I don't know if you, did Rav Willi speak about this at Rav Shapton's scene? They were shtar chavrusas. They would walk home together before Rav Willi got married. They would live in the apartment. They were chavrusas when their kids had pediatrician appointments. They scheduled the appointments together so they could learn in the waiting room. Both sides. These are our vein. These are our gedolim. I'm crying now. I'm teary-eyed because I say Ashrei Matzav Chokim that we have role models. Okay, role models. It may not be shayach in that particular way. Okay, I don't know if you're gonna have a chavrusa and have babies at the same time. Ask them. They'll tell you the sugyas that they were mevarer together and the piske halacha that emerged from those kavrusas. There wasn't a second wasted. Then, like, it's no surprise when you see the godless that emerges that separates the men from the boys. Literally. So Rav Elchanan and the Panovich Rav were learning together in the Mishmash one day. Sounds like the beginning of a joke, right? Okay. So they're learning together. The kol kachim etzel morna chavetz chaim. They were telling them chavetz chaim had a kachim kol. He was able to pinpoint the precise sugya that they were learning. In the middle of the chavusa, Rav Elchanan gets a telegram that his son was born. They had a son that was born to him in a different city, in the other city where he came from. Okay, Omar Rabbi Yochanan has a bracha, hatzricha. He stood up, made a bracha. When you have a son, Shulchan says you make a bracha of a tova meitiv. And we had Shavu Talmud of also Indian Shayos. We got right back into the sugya. Okay. Now, one second, so we're not over yet. Uchshagia Yom Ches Lamila. Okay, now it's 8 days later. So Balak Chavetz Chaim says, "Savam Lo Shem Seilu Bris." Came to his Rebbe. Came to Chavetz Chaim and said, "Okay, Rebbe, you know, I'm going to be gone for a day. I'm going home for the bris. I had a boy. Shalom Chavetz Chaim Shem Mar Mo. So Chavetz Chaim said, "Excuse me, sir, are you a Moel?" Uchshahishir Rebbe Chanan She'ain a Moel. Chavetz said, "No." So he said, "Tama Chavetz Chaim Imki Lama Nasiya." Yachal Atoli Sharpo, what exactly are you going for? Why can't you just stay here? Okay, so again, Rabotai, two points. First of all is, again, we're talking about Gedolei Olam. Gedolei Olam are people on a totally different level. But this is more important than even saying that is, skip to the next paragraph. Okay, I've heard that story in different places. In brackets, Rav Moshe Shmuel et Shamati Lohosef, Shabano Rav Elazar Simcha Zatzal. Rav Chanan had a son, his name was Rav Simcha Wasserman. He had a yeshiva in Los Angeles. Very nice art school book called Rav Simcha Speaks. Many of you may not even know, you may be Talmidim of Talmud Rav Simcha Wasserman. So, Rav Simcha Wasserman, Rav Chanan's son, Hayem Meitzer Akach, was always very bothered by the fact, maybe it was his bris, I don't know. Sha'olam lo masayimin masha omer lo chavetz chaim. So the problem is people tell that story, and they don't know, they don't add what happened next in the story. The chavetz chaim said something else to Rav Chanan. He said, "Shlach mevrak l'raya secha shalenim he maskim the digital tablet." Chavetz Chaim said, "Send a telegram back to your wife and ask if she minds if you're at the bris or not." Okay, so the stam meshi was an eishes chayal also. Okay, but that's a very important part of the story. Okay, Chavetz Chaim was trying to teach a lesson. Chavetz Chaim was obviously trying to say that if you need to be there, you need to be there. But if you don't need to be there, then every second counts. Every second counts. Okay, but so. No, at the bris itself, so there's an Indian which is questionable. So there spans the spectrum. We spoke about it from Doraisa to Minhag. Rav Shulchan mentioned it. Yeah. So the at the bris. So yeah, there's a mitzvah to be mesameach with her. No, he's not present. No. What's that? Correct, but he has a shaliach. He has someone to do it for him. So it is a question, right? So send the telegram back. But we also learned that if there's no father around, so the mother goes and hires them all. That's not a machayev. If I appoint a shliach to do b'dikas chametz in my house, so adrab, I don't have to be there because I'm in Florida and he's in New York and he's doing it for me. Yeah. What the rest?
Yeah.
So again, we're not talking about ourselves. What's that?
If he's present,
unfortunately, I hate to say it, but over the generation of Kleisel, there have been plenty of Britain that did not always have a father there, unfortunately. Okay, Bosai, final point, okay? This is much more, this is for our level. Yonah? I had a feeling you're not going to take this too well. Okay, this I think we can all identify with. Okay, one more Chavetz Chaim Rebbe Chanan. Okay, final story. Shamati Reb Shalom Shadron Zatzal. You know who Reb Shalom Shadron was? The Magid of Yishlaim. You know Rabbi Pesach Kron? The Magid speaks. That was him. This was the Magid. Okay, Shalom Shadron. Shashamay Merabim Panavish Zatzal. Shalom Yachem Rebbe Chanan Zatzal. So Reb Shalom Shadron heard from Panavish Rav, the other Chavrusa. Okay, Pam Hutzkal L'Sefer V'Rosh Chavetz Chaim Mevi'u B'Shartzion. So one time they were looking for a sefer, and they didn't have it in yeshiva. So they noticed, oh, the Chavetz Chaim quotes this sefer in the Shaar Tzion, right? The Shaar Tzion is the bottom line of the Mishnah Berurah where he has all the citations. So he says, oh, Chavetz Chaim must have the sefer. Let's go knock on his door, and we'll see if he has the sefer. So, Holoko Shem Chavetz Chaim, again, this gives me the, you know, just the, shakes me up, like, they were like, they could just like walk over to Chavetz Chaim's house, you know, like, okay? So they walk over to his house. So as soon as he opened the door, he said, oh, you know, what brings you here? So we came to buy the sefer. He said, I don't have the sefer. I don't own it. You quote the sefer. You must have owned it. He says, I needed the sefer. I borrowed it. I give it back to the person who lent it to me. Chavetz Chaim turned around, and he looked at his bookshelf, and he gave a big sigh. So Rebbe Chanan, what are you so disturbed about? That just because you don't have the sefer? So he said, I'm not upset that I don't have the Sefer. He says, sometimes I look at my collection of Sfarim and I ask myself, did I really need every single Sefer on the shelf? He said, Sfarim cost money. And the Chofetz Chaim is famous for saying that in America, they say time is money. I say money is time. Everything that requires money that I need to spend on, it means more time that I'm devoting towards making the money as opposed to whatever else productive in Ruchnis I could be doing. And any tzarchla is a Sefer. So he said, you know, I spent $10 on the Sefer. Maybe I didn't need it. Maybe I could have borrowed the Sefer from someone. I said, I'm not sure. So Chonan said, you know, like, how many Sfarim do you think the Chofetz Chaim had? He said, he had 50 or 60. No, I'm sorry, 30 or 40 Sfarim. But the Chofetz Chaim, the value of every second was so important to him. On his level, he even in his Ruchnis, he felt maybe he misappropriated the Sfarim. So we don't have, so for our level, Yonah, forget the Sfarim. Everyone should buy a lot of Sfarim. Some say it's a big mitzvah. But you know, look around your room at home. Look around your living room and say to yourself, like, you know what? When I look forward, don't look back, look forward. When I start a family, I get married, I have a home. I'm going to fill my home with stuff. I'm going to have clothing, and I'm going to have appliances, and I'm going to have furniture, right? So every penny I spend is time that I devoted towards the goal and pursuit of achieving or acquiring that. Some of those things are extremely important, and some of those things are indispensable. And most of us cannot and should not, you know, will not be able to live the existence of the, you know, the Chofetz Chaim had a handful of chairs that were falling apart and a table. Okay, that's not where we're holding it. That's not where we're aiming to. But you'll find some things in your house that you say to yourself, like, is that a pursuit? Is that a goal? Is that like the role, talking about brachas before. My kids are going to hear me making brachas all day. So that's going to be an ever-present image in their head of what their home is. The other things that could be in the home, that when I think about it, that's not where I want their efforts and their time and their money and their focus to be directed. I have to take those things into account. But on the most practical level now, every second of learning counts. Every second, even if you're not in shiur for whatever reason, but you can make it for the last half an hour, be there for the last half an hour. The svara of, well, if I miss the first half, then there's no point in me coming to the last half. Okay, maybe you want to understand what was going on in shiur. Okay, so go next door and open up your chumash and do shiur mikra. Every second is so valuable. And life only gets busier and busier. I know it's hard to say that to a person when you're in the middle of midterms. You get married, you have kids. Just life gets busier and busier. Yeah, and you can be married and have midterms. Okay. But the people who succeed are the people who know how to take advantage of. There's no time.
I don't know where the time goes. Okay.
You heard it here, Abosai. You heard it from the Chassan. Okay. Kadosh Baruch Hu should bless us to value every second. And not only to value every second, but to plan to make use of every second, and to be matzliach and elevating each of those moments in a way that when we get to Shemayim, we'll have a portfolio, we'll have a lot to show for every second that we spend on this earth.